Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Ann W. Smith, co-chair of the arts member-led of the club's member-led arts forum, and we are hosting this program together with the member-led health and medicine forum. We welcome our listeners on the radio, and we invite our audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. This evening's program, Humor, Health, and Well-Being, is in association with the Medical Clown Project, a nonprofit organization that has developed a therapeutic clowning program which involves professional clowns who engage with the entire hospital ecosystem. It's my pleasure to introduce our speakers. Are they all here? Some of whom are here and some of whom will become obvious. Ben Johnson, whom you will see shortly, has worked as a professional performer and teacher since 1997. His credits are as an actor, improviser, and clown with appearances at American Conservatory Theater, Bats Improv, and Cirque du Soleil, the clown care unit of the Big Apple Circus. He has a master's degree in teaching from Brown University and has taught at many schools of theater, Berkeley Rep, Mills College, California Shakespeare, Pixar University, UC San Diego, Wheaton College, the University of Rhode Island, and at public and private schools on both coasts. And I'm delighted to welcome back Jeff Raz to the Commonwealth Club. The artistic director of the Medical Clown Project, Jeff is an international theater and circus artist and educator. He's done lead roles for Cirque du Soleil, the Lincoln Center Theater, San Francisco Shakespeare Festival, Pickle Family Circus, Vaudeville Nouveau, Theater Works, Del Arte Players, Berkeley Rep, etc., etc. He is a physical theater and circus arts teacher in the U.S., Europe, and China. He's a founding director of the Clown Conservatory at San Francisco Circus Center. He's developed a medical clowning program with for the Circus Center with San Francisco General Hospital and has led trainings for the clown care unit at the Big Apple Circus. He's currently the associate producer of Circus Flora, and having written 12 plays, his next piece, The Road to Hades, will be premiered by Shotgun Players in mid-July. Phil Weglartz, this is Phil, is an activities therapist at the California Pacific Medical Center. He's a registered expressive art therapist and a licensed California marriage and family therapist. Phil has spent many years offering individual and group therapy for adults with complex medical problems and seniors with all stages of Alzheimer's, offering emotional counseling for parents, families, and caregivers. He has an MA in counseling psychology with an emphasis in expressive arts therapy from the College of Integral Studies in San Francisco, with additional postgraduate training in the use of improvisational therapy and also practice in training in trapeze and aerial dance. And after this presentation section concludes, then we'll take your questions, and you'll know when the time is right. On with the show.
Imagine going to visit a friend or a relative in the Alzheimer's unit. You haven't been looking forward to this at all. And you arrive, and it's a strange sound coming through the door of the day room, and you look in, and there's your friend or relative in front of a group of smiling people playing Juliet with a strange hat on to a clown Romeo, with another clown orchestrating on piano on the side. And your friend or relative hasn't smiled like this in years. Imagine your brother just had a hip replacement and is not doing so well in rehab. Learning to walk for a second time is no fun. And you arrive and you get off the elevator and you turn and there he is. But he is bombing down the hall with that walker. And you, whoa. And the physical therapist is right behind. And you turn and you see a clown down the hall juggling with only a small space between the clubs and the wall.
and your brother is heading for that space. And he gets by, just inches past the clubs, and looks back at the clown and says, "Next time, knives." And he laughs and keeps going down the hall. Imagine your nephew or your son had surgery and is in pediatric intensive care unit. And you arrive and there's some doctors looking through the door, and that's not a good sign, except that they're laughing. And there is your nephew sitting up on the bed, and there's a nurse on one side and another nurse on the other, and there's a third nurse who's pretending to be the camera woman, and you realize that they're enacting a sort of hospital version of American Idol. And that the young man who's about 13-year-old and way beyond clowns is playing Simon, the bad judge. And the clowns are auditioning for him. And at the end, the two adults who are the good judges say, "Oh, thumbs up." And Simon, with a big smile, goes, "You're out of here," and laughs. And later that day, when you're still there at the ICU, and there's been a lot of medical procedures, that young man has still got the sense of play from the morning, even though it's been a long day in ICU. You've just imagined what medical clowning is about in the entire ecosystem of the hospital, in the entire range of life, from infants to people who are in triple digits and beyond. No one's beyond triple digits, I know. Some of you are doing the math, I saw that. Today we want to spend about 45 minutes explaining about medical clowning and the Medical Clown Project in particular, and showing you some of the things that are involved, because obviously clowning is experiential. Just chatting about it maybe doesn't do it justice. We're going to take your questions, as Anne said, and we have the microphone because we also are on the radio. The things we want to get across are give you a general idea of what medical clowning is in the world today, because it's blooming in different places in odd and wonderful ways. Give you an idea of how medical clowning fits within a hospital and within the therapeutic ideas and practice of a hospital. And then some ideas about where the Medical Clown Project is going from here. Oh, you're just in time. Come on in. Good, you've got a seat. So about a year ago, my wife got one of those emails forwarded with a link and went to a video, and it was from an Israeli group called the Dream Doctors. And they're in 17 hospitals in Israel and are so integrated into the hospital systems that they have a 4-year degree program for medical clowning. And my wife, Sherry Sherman, who's a psychologist, said, "Oh, that's interesting. That's really interesting. There's a place where her work, psychology, and my work might start to really visit each other." And from that moment, we've been building the Medical Clown Project. We also looked around at some of the best practices here in the United States. And the Clown Care Unit out of the Big Apple Circus is one of the places that have been doing incredible work with professional clowns in hospitals, mainly on the East Coast, but also in Seattle and for a short time here in San Francisco. One of the great things that they have pioneered is this idea that in any hospital, patients don't have power at all. Some of you no doubt know, you're lying in a bed, people come in and poke things, stick things, and especially if you're a kid, you just don't know what's going on. So part of our job as clowns is to give some power back. And that starts even when you get to a room. We never go into a room unless we've knocked on the door and gotten permission from the patient in the room. Yes?
Jeff.
Yeah, hi. We're doing a procedure here.
Apologies. Yeah.
Thanks.
I just want to say I'm sorry I'm late.
Yeah, it's okay. Thank you. We're working here. Okay. Yeah, thanks.
I'm going to be outside.
Good. Thank you.
Don't let me distract you.
Not distracted. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
sometimes there's a little play of who actually has the status. Is it the doctor, the parent, the kid? But we'll always play with the patient.
It's okay, Parker, right there. Is that okay?
And in this play, we'll always make the patient the one who sets the rules. If they say no, leave, we'll leave. Now, if somebody else says no, leave, we might not. And the whole time, we're working within a very complicated medical system where life and death is not just something you say. It's real. It's what's happening. So we're always relating to that world. Even the person who's cleaning the garbage is part of that ecosystem. We always work in pairs. Sometimes I question that methodology. But not tonight. We work in pairs because when you're getting your hands, after you come in and out of every room, you have to put that spritzy stuff in and get your hands. And that's when you actually, how did we do? We did okay, let me check. You have a running debrief. You also, if you don't have a good idea, if you just walked into a room and there's something that shocked you, you count on your partner having a great idea. And sometimes that happens. Really well. You also have the opportunity, if your play with the patient isn't going very well, or sometimes the patient can't play, that you can do something a little more performative. You can take
the space and turn it like into a stage, kind of. Like even if you're like in a room or in a waiting area or something like that, I have something that's performative.
Performative.
Would it be all right with you guys if I did something that's a little bit performative? Yeah. You could say no if you don't, and then I'll leave. Just okay. One performative thing, and then I'm gonna be quiet, and then you guys can talk, and it'll be fantastic. Just gonna get ready. Say, hold on. Sorry. Here is it. Yeah. That wasn't it. That wasn't it. Just, hey, look.
What do you get?
Look.
Now, we might be in our waiting room or in the Alzheimer's unit or even in the hallway at pediatrics, and you catch someone's eye and you might do this.
Wasn't it? I had a magic trick.
Oh, magic trick! Now, magic tricks are usually to fool people and make you look really, well, magical, while they look really stupid.
Well, we don't.
But
we
that
don't,
doesn't
don't.
Go with the theory that it's always about the patient being on top. So.
This is the perfect. The magic trick is dependent on you, actually, because you have to use your own kind of magical, those things, the brainwaves, and then you have to send the information to me, which is difficult for you because my head is very thick. I need help. Can you help me? Yeah, you. All right. You don't have to. If you want, are you sure? You want to think about it for a minute? Okay, all right. Listen, it's a card trick. You ever seen a card trick?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. All right, so you know how they work. They use cards, and then they go like this. So check it out. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to please pick any card out of this deck, okay? Well, first of all, they're all normal cards, right? They're all different. All right. Okay, so any card you want. Anyone? Now, just one. Just that one? Okay, that's good. Okay. Now look at it. Look at it. Now show it to all your friends. Can everybody see that? Just do you want to help?
Yeah.
Jeff's gonna help out just to make it more visible for in the back there. And don't tell me. Don't show me or nothing. And for you, just put the card on the table right here. And I want you to take your finger like this, and I want you to put it right there. Okay. and sort of hold it in place, so that way you know that I'm not doing any kind of like, and taking it away from you. Just hold it right in place right there, okay? Everyone calm down. All right. You need to get a picture of the card in your head, all right? Like I said, you're using your own kind of like magical frequencies, and you need to kind of like send it right into my head. And we need all of you to do it. All right. Do it. Imagine there's a picture of the card floating in the air right here.
You get
anything? No. My head is very, very thick. You have to really put it out there. Just like think like, I'm magical. And then send it in. All right.
How's it going? You get anything?
It's a red card.
Keep sending
it. All right. It's like a high value card, right? Ace of Hearts.
For those of you in the radio audience, that was the correct answer.
That was good.
That was amazing.
That was the first time that's ever worked. That was good. I want to get this out of the way so you can do your talk. Where is it? I've got to get that out of the way. Yeah. Ah. Wait, check this out. Watch. Check this out. Watch. Oh, look out. Everyone, look over there. Look over there. Look that way. Ow.
I like that.
Ow.
It's so much better when they have a microphone on.
All right. Jeff, I got an idea. Do you guys want to see one more hat trick? And then I swear I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to sit in the corner, and then you guys can talk about medicines and stuff. What? Is it okay if I show you one more? Yeah. All right, check it out. You got to take this, and you got to go down to the end of it, all the way at the end. Oh. Just make space for him. Hey, Jeff, you ever thrown a frisbee? Did you think you could throw that hat like a frisbee? Like,
absolutely.
All right. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, we need your moral support. So you can do that by putting one hand up in the air like this. The other hand is out. And you go, clap, 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 clap. That was close. You almost got on that guy's head right there. You ready? Okay, that's good. You're gonna throw it up in the air, and it's gonna loft it. And I think I've identified the issue here. We need a moral support. So can you guys all on the count of three say, you can do it? Ready? 1, 2, 3.
You can do it.
Okay, hands. That was great. That was good. That was very nice. That was good. Yeah, you threw it right up in here. My name is Ben Johnson, and I'm actually a very serious person. I will stop being a clown for a moment here to talk to you. I think the good place to start is my experience working for the Clown Care Unit, which, as Jeff said, is a program run by the Big Apple Circus. Some of you may have seen some of the Big Apple Circus. There's a PBS show called Circus that was on. Anybody? No? Yes? One person? Thank you very much. It's a circus on the East Coast. They have a program where they send performers into about 16 of the premier pediatric hospitals on the East Coast. And I worked for them for 2 years, between 2004 and 2007. In that time, I worked for three different hospitals, Yale New Haven Children's Hospital, Boston Children's Hospital, and Hasbro Children's Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island. And I did about 1,500 hours of in-hospital work, doing work similar to this kind of partnered play that Jeff and I were getting into. We would go to a lot of different parts of the hospital, from bedside to waiting rooms to inpatient and outpatient clinics, it's interesting. It's like when I would talk to people at that time about what I did for a living. They would come up with like three questions very often, they were generally like, you know, where do you go in the hospital? What areas of the hospital do you go to? What do you do there, and why? why are you there? And so I thought that might be a worthwhile, you know, three worthwhile questions to answer for you. In our work for the CCU, we went, as I said, everywhere. We went to the emergency room. We went to the bone marrow transplant clinic. We went to the lobby, to the elevators, all over the place, because we had established a relationship with the hospital and kind of over time developed that relationship to where they requested us to come into all these different areas. The what do you do part of it is it generally breaks down into juggling, magic, music, and some form of storytelling. And whether that's like straight ahead storytelling, like I'm telling you a once upon a time story, or whether that's kind of improvised storytelling that's based on a relationship, an imaginary relationship between you and your partner. And so some might call that the clowning element. So one way of thinking about it is that there's juggling, magic, music, and clowning. And they're all kind of connected by the skills of improvisation. So that's kind of like what we do when we go into the different areas of the hospital. The why part of it is, Jeff touched on it a little bit already, but to me, the main thing is that in the world of the hospital, the lowest status person is the patient, right? And in clowning, we deal with status as a tool to kind of play with and tell stories. So what we try to do as performers is go in and wedge ourselves underneath the patient in terms of status. So they decide whether you come in or not. They decide when you leave, right? They decide the tone and the pacing and the duration of every interaction. And in doing so, the intention is that we give them a little bit of space to breathe, if for like a small amount of time, so that they can be a person first and a patient second. And hopefully that experience allows them just, you know, some time for their you know, their body and their brain and their heart to kind of get a good handhold, you know? And so yeah, that's the main part of the why we go in there. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to perform one more magic trick for you. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. It requires that all of you close your eyes. Close your eyes. We're going to count down from 10 to 1, and when we hit 1, you're all going to open your eyes, and I'm going to be magically transformed into a well-dressed, respectable person. Ready? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm Phil Weglars, and I've got the great pleasure to work with Ben and Jeff on the medical units. And so I get to describe a little bit about the environment and the needs and kind of the who, what, where, whys for San Francisco. So my job is to work as an activities therapist on an adult unit here in San Francisco at the Cal Pacific Medical Center. It's my little badge there. And so what that is we're charged with meeting the psycho and social needs of patients. What I tell people every day, I go and meet me and my team of, we're art therapists, drama therapists, expressive arts therapists, which are people who mix the arts together, somatic psychotherapists, and other people from various counseling backgrounds, as well as graduate students. We go in and meet every single adult who's admitted to this skilled nursing unit, which is an inpatient rehabilitation center, and talk to them about their, we try to get them to be aware of their emotional needs and what they might be going through as an experience in the hospital. And then all of us also spend time on a in-hospital residential care program for people with mid to late stage dementia, which is Alzheimer's to other forms of dementia, from Parkinson's to people who have had strokes and have dementia as related to that and other disease process. So what we go in to do is kind of unique, and we're doing it every day. We do it 7 days a week, 360 days a year. And our main, what is it that we use? We use the arts as a means of engaging people for the purpose of identifying the patients or the person, we call them residents, the people who are living on the residential unit, the residents or the patients' own internal resources. I think Ben said it very well about the person who's there, not looking at them as a patient or someone with disabilities, but what are their innate abilities that they hold on to in this situation. And we sincerely believe that everybody can play at some level, regardless of their condition. And the arts, all the arts and the wide spectrum of all those interactions give a lot of means for engaging people. One of the things that I want to say about the Alzheimer's program in particular is that if you have someone in your life, a loved one or anyone that you've known with dementia, it's a really idiosyncratic process, and it can kind of do different things to different people. So when you take 25 people who live together in this very unique, it's like a living, an assisted living kind of setting, when you put all those people together, you really have 25 different experiences of themselves. So some people are very verbal and witty and mean and critical, and other people are unable to find words or produce sounds beyond a hum, or get the motor planning. So I'm going to use some like clinical stuff here. So my background as a therapist. So the motor planning and the sequencing and the sensory processing is all really uniquely challenged for each person. So finding ways of connecting to that takes a lot of skill, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy. So on the skilled nursing facility where you have adults who are requiring inpatient rehabilitation, same thing. And even take that same diversity that you have in the Alzheimer's population and then make it 10 times as big. It's the entire adult population of San Francisco. I don't know if any of you have had to be in a skilled nursing facility, but one of my attractions to working in that environment is that it crosses socioeconomic levels. It crosses into every neighborhood in the city. We have patients rooming with each other who speak different languages. We have people who are from all over the world. We have people with all kinds of incredible experience, from 18-year-olds to 100, and I think the oldest person I've ever worked with is like 102, 103. And just having these people get a chance to interact with each other and also with us, and finding that strength that they might have inside of them to cope with this very difficult situation. Now, where I see one of the primary objectives of our work is to relieve the tension of this whole experience, the anxiety of the experience, and to elevate people's moods. There's that natural sense of, like energy and levity that you get from humor or just from that smile. I noticed once I did this little experiment walking around just smiling at people and noticing just this little sparkle that was there. So what I appreciate about what the clowns bring to our site is that there's this like explosion of energy from the Alzheimer's program, where their experience was to come onto our unit after lunch, which is a transition that many people do via wheelchair, some people do via walker, some people are walking independently, but it's this kind of nice kind of milieu, middle time, and they join right in to what's happening. And some people have a difficulty in that, that the anxiety gets when you have to make a transition from one place to another and you're not oriented to where you are or what's going on or who this person is right there, to have a playful, friendly presence show up, and all of a sudden it becomes a parade and a song and a story where a flirtation and this potentially negative, or some people, you know, negative experience all of a sudden becomes this celebration. And that leads into a community room where, as you know, you heard Jeff tell some of the stories, where plays get performed, where spontaneous moments of play, revelry take place. On the medical unit, the skilled nursing unit, which is just a couple floors up, they take the elevator up. And you can actually, when you're standing outside the elevator with the clowns in the elevator, you can hear them coming. And right, there's a moment of anticipation as the doors open, and then the entire staff looks and wonders what's going to happen next. And there's this whole moment of like, and some people are kind of like, what's going to happen? Some people just like, it's the break in their day for these like very, very, you know, stressed out nurses and doctors and physical therapists and occupational therapists. And there's immediate banter. I loved that moment with the joking, and there was this ongoing story of where was the elephant? I heard, thought you were clowns. Where's the animals? You know, your circus. And that became a running gag that every week it was, where's the elephant? Oh, it's in the car, or it's in the other elevator, or we split it up today. And people would, you know, when I would go and say, hey, the clowns are coming today, they would say, are they bringing the elephant? It was in people's consciousness. And what I, the ecosystem idea, if you see the hospital as an ecosystem, a happy caregiver makes for like 10 happy patients. If you can lower the stress of a nurse, and then that nurse is going to see, you know, they each care for, you know, 10 to 15 people at a time, they're spreading that. And if they're tense and they hold that tension, they're going to spread that tension. So if we can work with them, and the clowns would just burst out of the elevator, work with everyone, all the staff who are right there at the nurse's station, and then start to kind of work their way up and down the halls. So I have a couple quotes that I wanted to share just from the people that got to interact with the clowns, just so you're not just hearing me share kind of my energy and enthusiasm for the project. But there was the staff from the Alzheimer's program, their reaction was, they're amazing! The residents are all awake and alive, not and participating. It is one of the greatest challenges to get a group of people all raise the energy and interacting. There was a resident on that unit who speaks both Spanish and English. And as she ages, she's using predominantly Spanish and is actually using mostly songs in Spanish at this point. But that's something that they can work with, because they can use music and they can use kind of the, you know, just working with that. That's what that person communicates with. That's what they can go with. And so somebody in my team just noticed them working with them and just said, she's in her element. And it was this priceless moment. We have a lot of comments where people use the word priceless or just there's another patient saying, this is an interesting hospital. It's a good place to be sick. And a good place to get better. there was a member of my team who said, I love my job. All I do is bring the clowns into a patient's room and watch the magic and laughter unfold. From the hilarious elephants and tigers in the elevator to the tenderer moments where they're using various moments to make the patient's wishes come true. So that's all. I just want to just really thank them for the opportunity to have them come to our hospital, and I hope we get to work together more.
Phil forgot to mention one day when the first time I was on the Alzheimer's unit alone, my partner had to go rehearse at ACT. He was understudying for Bill Irwin, and for some reason that took precedent over me. And Phil and I were there, and we went into the Alzheimer's unit, and there was a woman with a walker. And Phil, who has done a lot of trapeze work in his time, started doing a trapeze act on her walker. She didn't care at all. Then I started juggling the ends of the... No. What really worked was when we held the ends with the tennis ball, you know, the bottoms of the feet, and started using them like microphones. And so soon, here we were, after we had both tried to show off to no avail, the three of us going, ooh, and that is what worked. Working in the Alzheimer's clowning there is like being in Fellini's movie for an hour. It's not the place that you would think that clowning can happen, and yet it is an incredible place for it to happen for us as the clowns. One of the key things that I've learned from Phil and from Rob Saracen and other folks who work at the hospital is this idea that if you can go to the world of play, you can be in reality. If you can't go to play, if you can't make that leap, you might not be able to ground yourself here in reality. So it's almost diagnostic if we can get to the world of play. One day I was playing ball with somebody, but it was imaginary. It was like this. I would say, oh, hey, catch. And throw back. Oh, there. Hey, in the back. Thanks, good throw. And then a few people just couldn't do it. And so I thought, oh, I'm kind of blowing it. So I went and I got an actual ball, and we played ball. And as someone who started as a juggler, that was right. Everyone figured out that they could throw the ball back. But speaking afterwards with the therapy team, they said, well, you know what? When you were doing the imaginative, that thing that needed the leap to the world of play, when people could make that, you were making neurons connect in ways that is very healthful for someone with dementia. And so that may have been where the good moments were, even though for me as a clown, the throwing the ball had more success. And that's one of the fascinating things in medical clowning, is recalibrating from the clown's point of view, what is success? What are we doing here? Why? That why has been answered by professional clowns and amateur clowns all around the world for many years. And in some ways, being in a hospital is as natural for a clown as being on a stage or in a ring, and more important. In some ways, it goes way back to the roots of clowning, which would be the shamans. You heal and you're a fool at the same time. And that's been split. And now one of my friends who runs a clown care unit in Brazil talks about, we're just coming home, just coming back together, bringing the healing back with the performance. And it, on a good day, it feels that way. Sometimes they're not good days, but on the good days, it feels that way. We've mentioned the Clown Care Unit, which is the seminal group in the United States. There are also groups all over Europe, as I said earlier, in Israel. And in many places, clowns and hospitals are expected. We here on the West Coast, even though we're ahead in everything else, are a little behind in this aspect. And we're working, the Medical Clown Project is working to make it more expected here. I expect to go and have a light feeling, not just the heavy feeling in the hospital. And that expectation, we have found, comes from the medical staff at the hospitals. I have not found anyone who asked me those three questions at the hospital. Folks at the hospital go, where have you been? You're late. And they said, well, medical clowning. I know, get to work. Get the makeup, grab. Because it is a place where clowns should be.
We started a California Pacific Medical Center because my wife had worked there, and we have a lot of wonderful connections there and wonderful people to learn from and work with in the pediatrics units and in the different adult units. In a day, we will start and we'll do one pediatric unit, then the ICU, pediatric ICU. Then we go to the waiting room for another pediatric unit because the doctor who's the head of that basically told me she would hurt me if I didn't. So we have to go there. And then we'll play in the other waiting room. Then we go across the street and we'll work in two different Alzheimer's units and up at the skilled nursing facilities on two different floors. So we'll hit six floors and three or four waiting rooms in a day. And that would be a clown shift. We're talking with San Francisco General, who have invited us to come work there, and to Laguna Honda, two places of great need. They are both, as you probably know, county facilities. Laguna Honda has a brand new building, which if you haven't been there, is beautiful. Not hard to get better than that old building, but it is beautiful. They have 740 residents there. That's a lot of clowning opportunity. And they've invited us. So we're at the point now where we're wanting to expand, and we have a dream of expanding to every hospital and even clinics in the Bay Area. We have done some work at St. Anthony's Clinic in the Tenderloin, and that's a whole other world, a little more like what Ben and I did tonight, the entertainment quality. And we think there's some value there, too. At this point, I want to open it up to any questions that you might have. I'm going to invite Ben to come back up here. If you have a question, raise your hand in the back. While the microphone's getting to you, I just want to say one thing. A question I have that I'm always asking is how it impacts the clowns. And for us, I'll speak for myself. I find that this brings me into a community in a totally different way than when I'm doing a show. And that's of great value to us. Please.
Hi. Do you have any data around healing and the help so that helps you expand into other hospitals and be funded?
It's the great question, the question of research. I'm going to let Phil take a little bit of that. And then if you would hand the microphone to Sherry Sherman, my wife back there. Data is not prevalent, but there is some.
Yeah, and the way that we track our services is that we'll track. We actually on the medical floor, we'll take referrals for who is interested in a clown visit. So we have a place to start with, and then we'll track how much time they spend with them. Now, as the project goes forward, we'll be able to maybe watch what the effects of those visits are on various things like length of stay or. We can find some other measures, but we're collecting data.
Sure. There is a fair amount of data on the impact of healing in terms of the endorphins, in terms of reducing stress, in terms of reducing depression. There is not a whole lot yet in the medical clown world. There has been one pretty prominent study done for pediatrics that for children prior to going into surgery, that there was a reduction of, and they by doing tests, measurements of anxiety before for both the children and the parents, and they needed less sedation. And I actually have a conference call set up next week with the person who's in charge of the evaluation for Israel program, trying to figure out. I mean, it's very challenging to figure out what outcome measures can we gather, because there's many purposes. As you know, you gather outcome measures so you can improve the service, and you gather outcome measures because funders want to know outcome measures. So there's a fair amount of qualitative, some of the stories that all three of them told, and we're going to move into how to do more qualitative research around it and also figure out what kind of quantitative research we can get.
Thank you for that question. It's one of the challenges we're facing right now.
California Medical Facility is one of the premier hospitals within the Sutter system. Are you doing anything to expand the program to other Sutter entities?
Yes, absolutely. Sutter is a big system, and it's we know folks working in other parts of the Sutter system, and absolutely looking at there. We're looking at California Pacific Medical Center as a home base for training. We've already done one set of training. Ben and I trained three other clowns, and it's so perfect because there are so many people like Phil and other folks who work really closely with us and we can get trained well, and then go to places that it's a little more challenging to be at general. There's a level of tension there that you need to be trained up for. So we're looking at that kind of relationship between the different hospitals.
I've never heard of medical clowning. It's probably not all over the world and in every state, but I wish you'd also teach doctors and nurses to be compassionate and to be lighter, and holistic doctors, I'm sure, know much more about that. So, you know, that's just so vital. That's just so important for healing. If you can also, you know, educate them and let them know somehow, because sometimes there's no medical clowns around. So maybe after you leave, they're better.
Sometimes there's a dearth of medical clowns. Ben, can you talk a little bit, though, about the interaction with doctors and nurses over the longer term, when the clowns have been in a hospital for a while, how that affects their work?
Well, you know, I think that the one thing that comes to mind for me is the idea that often when people think about clowns in any setting, and specifically in the hospital, it's like, oh, it's for the children, it's for the young patients, but the reality is that it is for everyone else, and often it's the fact that it's placed on the young patient gives the staff and the family kind of permission to have a good time, or to kind of have that feeling of levity, you know. Whereas you know, that's not something that they would necessarily allow themselves.
Yeah, we all have the spirit of play, but as we get older and have hard experiences, we often lose that.
Well, and
I just wanted to know. I've seen Bill Irwin. I love ACT. What were you going to understudy him for?
Oh, it was Scapan.
It was a hard day when I had to mention at the hospital that Ben's not going to be there for a little while, but it got a lot better when I said, oh, he's going to be understudying Bill Irwin for Scapan, the largest theater in the Bay Area. Oh, really?
Do you or have you worked in psychiatric facilities? And also, would you inform us a little bit how you change your routine and presentation concerning different settings?
We have not. Have you worked in psychiatric facilities?
Yes.
Like I said, we have not. He has.
We at Yale New Haven Children's Hospital, we would go into I don't think it was inpatient, but it was another facility that was across the street from the main building, and it was a kind of psychiatric facility for adolescents, and we would go in as one of the stops on our you know, itinerary for one of the days of the week, and we would be there for, you know, 20 minutes usually. We'd try to space the time out evenly throughout the schedule. As far as like adjusting the material to the people there, I think that goes for any different area of the hospital, any room that you go into. You kind of the one of the things that I have learned most from doing this work is how to take the temperature, right, and how to figure out what the individual patient or what the room needs from me at any given time, and not having any ego about it, right? Because sometimes the answer to that is like the patient needs you not to be here, right? And you really like cannot come in with any kind of like, you know, preset idea about what's going to happen, how you're going to be. It's really just about coming in, you know, with all your, you know, your ears open, your eyes open, just kind of like gathering as much information as you can, as quickly as you can, to kind of figure out what they need, you know. And sometimes what they need is they need something kind of like up and fun and loud, and sometimes they need something very, very gentle and quiet. And like I said, sometimes they need you to not be there, and then you go. So yeah, we would adjust it for that specific setting. At Yale New Haven, we would go into a day room, and then we would have two groups of patients come in.
split by age. There was a younger and an older group. And that was generally a little bit more performative. Like what we do in a setting like this where it would be like a waiting room or in a day room setting like that, we would kind of make it a little bit more of a show and less kind of intimate one-on-one.
The energy we had here was similar to the Alzheimer's Day Unit, where people were sitting.
Yeah. That's not a reflection on you.
Well, actually, you were wonderful. You were wonderful. But that bringing that large energy in, and it would obviously not be appropriate if the temperature of the room said not.
Mm-hmm. Well, somewhat tangential to the question raised by the young lady over here, and that is, you know, to me at least, hearing you, seeing you tonight, is clearly attitudinal, if you will, or the philosophy that has to be somewhat counter to how one perceives hospital settings. And is there a way, because clearly you can't take this level of talent and put it all over the country. It doesn't exist. How do you replicate what you're trying to do? Oh, my God.
You don't have to go on. That was good.
No, right. How do you replicate at least getting across the philosophy of likeness and fun is also professional? Because I've been in situations with nurses in particular. I'm sorry, nurses. That, you know, to have fun or be lighthearted is not professional and it's not acceptable. Mm. And so that's kind of the question. How do you get it out there?
You train people. There's a lot of really wonderful performers, wonderfully talented performers, who perform, tour the world, make a community of 100 or 1,000 people a night, and then go home to the hotel and watch HBO. And those people yearn for the connection. So a hospital has something to offer performers, and performers have something to offer a hospital. And it takes training. Mm-hmm. And it takes training.
How do you tell your story? That's what I'm saying. How do you let people know that you even exist?
Yeah. So that's tonight is the beginning of that, uh-huh. That's a perfect moment to ask. We'd love it if you would start telling the story. As you said, people in the West Coast, particularly, don't know from medical clowns, and it doesn't always compute. It may not commute either. We would love you to tell the stories. Use some of the stories we told. We feel that the stories are the gold here. When we're done with a shift, we come back and we would change in the volunteer office. And we would always make sure to tell the folks there some story from the floor, because they're in the volunteer office on the computer. And we got something to offer that'll lighten the world there. It takes time. And it takes training, and it takes telling the story over and over.
Want to do the plug. Ask your doctor about it. We're all consumers of healthcare in some way, at some level. So if you ask for it, then they have to provide it. So the more that we as receivers of the services, or when you're in a situation assisting someone else who's receiving a service, mention it, talk it up. Just that's a way to spread the word.
That's great. We have time for one more question, but we're not running away at the end at 7 o'clock. We will all be here, and there will be noshes, too, so it's much more pleasant to talk to us when you're eating, I understand. Yeah. One more question.
A few years ago, I needed a liver transplantation, not from drinking, but it was a different...
So you needed a liver transplant from drinking too much? Oh, not drinking. I didn't...
Clowning around, you know, those doctors and the professor. So they were willing me to get an 8-hour surgery. I told the doctor, I said, you know, doctor, you can live without a lover, but you cannot live without a liver.
Ba-dum-bum.
They will be in, they were laughing, and I believe that this helped me to have fantastic surgery.
Yeah. Crack a joke right before you go into anesthesia. If you didn't get that, you can live without a lover, but you can't live without a liver. The liver is there, the lover is not, but she's happy enough with the liver.
And by the way, it was in the
In Birmingham, Alabama, where your lover or your liver?
The liver.
Okay, the liver is the, okay. So you have a young liver.
And it could be the liver of a young black man. So I cannot be racist even if I want.
Because, very good. So.
Wow!
A Jewish liver in Birmingham. Wow. Before we conclude, I want to tell you one more story. And this was in the long term care unit, and I went in and there was a woman, and unfortunately I knew her because she'd been there every time I had been there, and I was there only once a week, and we'd seen each other many times. And at this point her daughter was actually sleeping on the daybed, and I had my little magic wand, and I went into the routine, make a wish, anything, what would you wish for? And she, I want to go home. I said, great, okay, where do you live? Danville. Abracadabra, bippity Banville. Bring you right back home to Danville. And she looked so sad that I started to, you know, I know she wasn't going anywhere. I knew the thing didn't work. And I started to say, well, it's new. I don't know if the battery's charged yet. And she looked at me, she says, I can't hear you. I'm not here. And I thought, oh my, even though I just got scared, she's playing. I said, well, where are you? I'm home. I said, oh, it's warm, 93 degrees. I said, oh, but where are I? I'm at the pool. I smell something. Barbecue. I said, oh, that doesn't look like water you're drinking. She goes, oh no, cranberry juice. And I walked out of the room, letting her drink some cranberry juice at poolside. We have to end with a little juggling.
We're going to end with the juggling?
Hui!
Ta!
Hui!
Ta!
Hui!
Ta! Sure, sure.
Well, our warmest thanks to Phil and Ben and Jeff. Thanks again so much for sharing the Medical Clowning Project with us. And thanks to our audience today and to our radio audience. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating the 108th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.